Deep Productions.
Yes! Welcome back to Go Deep the Podcast, a member of Go Deep Productions, where we have an opinion like we have a clue. Thank you for coming back. And here's your host, John Nothing Doe. Aw, yes, welcome back to the show. I almost feel like I should have done an echo on that last voice, like, John Doe, 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 Doe. I know, sorry. I'm getting myself too hyped up for this episode. We have a very exciting episode coming up for you folks. We kind of dug into things. We've kind of talked, and when I say we, obviously I mean Motorsports Mofo.
The one and only Motorsports Mofo, that is.
Got a lot of friends, but no homies. So you and I have kind of talked about this, and I want to get right into it right away. I don't want to fuck around. So electric cars.
Yeah.
And if you were to listen back, I don't know, 2 years ago, you'd see the enthusiasm we had for electric cars and the future we could see coming down the pipe. But as things have progressed past, COVID and all this other stuff, you come to realize a couple of things. One, the process in which it takes to, in order to make an electric car. Two, getting rid of it. How do you get rid of it effectively so it's not causing more environmental damage than using an ICE, which is internal combustion engine, right? So how do you do that? How do you do those two things? Three, where are the batteries being made? And four, when you look at the whole process, is it causing more pollution than the traditional ICE car is, right? So that's a big mouthful when you think about it, right?
A lot to dissect. The one thing I've always sort of maintained is like, or in a thought is, I love how, as say a car enthusiast, I can go and, you know, find in a field or a barn, anyone that, you know, knows what I'm talking about, you know, you find a barn find or some rare classic, or maybe not even not that rare, but a classic car sitting in a field, and with a, you know, sometimes you're lucky with a couple of hours of work or a short, you know, a little bit of gas type thing, you can actually still fire that thing back up and be rolling, you know, or towing it out of the field, and everything around it has been relatively undisturbed.
But if that was an electric car, there is no way in God's green earth that's fucking happening.
Well, I'll put it in this way, John, is that, you know, you think about like a little 9-volt battery and you...
Hold on, did you ever put your tongue on both sides?
No.
It's amazing.
I'm not even going to ask.
Keep moving on.
Let me explain a few things about you, though. But
in your way,
eventually you leave that 9-volt battery, and you see how it starts to leak and corrode. And I mean, especially imagine now you throw it into the ground, what it's going to start to do to the grass and things around it, and that's going to happen on a much faster timeline than, you know, a internal combustion engine vehicle is going to sit there and rot into the ground. So from that aspect alone, as a car guy, right there to me, that seems like a red flag, right? Right off the hop. I would like to know if I had a, you know, if I could see into the future, and obviously I can't, but if I could, I'd like to know, you know, 50 years from now, as an example, will anybody be restoring, you know, a
Tesla Model 3, yeah, no, enhanced,
like,
model.
Quite literally, like, will someone be restoring like their 2008 or 2010 Tesla?
Nissan Leaf.
Right? Versus, you know, you think about it, you know, someone that's restoring their 67 Chevelle. It's like, yeah, it's doable because you need a $300 car battery and you're in the game, right? And yeah, you might need to rebuild the engine, but it is rebuildable.
So this is where I think you and I are certain to agree, but it's not that we never disagreed.
I
think
I want to say, like, we never disagreed. I just always thought like electric cars in terms of the possibilities, and like from a performance side in terms of the instantaneous torque, that part there was really cool.
Yes.
But I mean, if someone says, you know, Mofo, do you want a gas powered internal combustion engine or hydrogen or something, like, well, I'll say, like, more so I'm more about the internal combustion engine. However it makes its power as like a piston or a rotary driven engine, I'm willing to be flexible on, but I would gladly take an internal combustible engine over something EV. And now call me old. I mean, whatever, but that's,
well, even
just
a hybrid, I think you'd be okay with.
I would be willing
less
to
battery.
I would entertain a hybrid, but I still don't have faith in the electric cars fully from what I've seen and been reading. And you know, and I start to think of even when they show about some of the stuff that GM and Ford was working on in terms of further performance package stuff, like for the drag
But GM
racing.
Had it right with one car.
No, and they did.
The
yeah.
Volt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not the Volt Junior, not the
But they were the also starting to like work into like an electric powered Camaro there that they were trying out, like again, like specifically just for like drag racing and R&D.
The Volt was special because it was the only one that had it had an electric engine and it had an ICE engine. So it was like the principle was based off of the electric engine. When you ran out of electricity, then you would go straight to the internal combustion engine. So to me, that was kind of like the harmony. I'd be okay with it being either way. I don't know about you, but I think that to me was kind of like the better of the both worlds. However, recently they've come up, and Toyota is like a pioneer, and I really mean this because I really like Toyota as a brand, and they've kind of figured out, and they're not the only ones. So I thought they were going to go a hydrogen fuel cell, but they found a way to make their engines so efficient that they're not blowing out CO2. And these engines aren't available to the regular consumer at this point. But they've been working on an engine that basically breaks apart the atoms, apparently, and takes the hydrogen, or not the hydrogen, but it takes the carbon away. So when it's blowing exhaust out, you're not blowing out harmful emissions. They're calling them zero emission ICE vehicles. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I've seen that, and I have to give it up to Toyota. I'm not a car guy by the same means that you are, but watching this technology move forward, and it just kind of shows that we're not done with ICE. We're not even close to being done to ICE as far as it looks. And if you make an engine like this, I'm sure the components are going to be expensive at first, like everything else that's pre-manufactured and all that stuff. But down the line, when everybody's got it, it'll be more sustainable. But they're also working on a water engine. And apparently they've got two models that are working right now. And it's not like the fictitious ones. These are the real deals. I've watched a couple of videos talking about it and how they've done it. And it's really interesting. It almost runs on the same principle as an ICE engine. And they pull the molecules and the hydrogen away. And the way that the hydrogen goes up to the top of the engine and blows through the piston is almost the same way as you would run an internal combustion engine.
And just to add to that, like, you know, I know people say, like, wow, it's so revolutionary. How is this possible? You know, let's not forget turn of the century, late 1800s, you know, steam engines were a regular thing, like a very regular thing. If you are fortunate enough to go to any of these antique tractor shows or steam shows, as they reference them to, I know like up here in Canada, various small town fairs and that still have them. But
the only steam show I get to see is on the Hub.
Yeah.
Delicious.
But no, if like there's a number of you can Google it, YouTube it, whatever. You know, steam engines, and they were huge, you know, late 1800s, early turn of the century, very, you know, and then ultimately the internal combustion engine, gasoline, everything like that came along and sort of pushed a lot of the steam engines out. But again, like it's not old technology by any stretch, like in terms of like looking at these different means of fueling an internal combustion engine.
But Toyota's kind of running the way. And what I mean by this is, you know, Toyota was kind of ahead of the curve before Tesla started really kind of coming into the market and taking control of things in a way in the electric field, right? Because they had their Prius hybrid. I know Honda had one. I think it was like, not the Odyssey, but I can't remember the name of the Honda one. But they were one of the first ones to come out with their hybrids. And they really could have ran away with the electric car, so to speak, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't. And that's the part that really surprises me. That's the part that really surprises me in the sense that they could have ran away with the market, but they didn't. So my question is, if a company like that is not running away with the market, and they weren't like Nissan where they were trying to push the Leaf right away, get it out the door. Yeah, you're not going to get very far, but it's, you know, it's green, right? That was the big push. It's green. When I look at Toyota as a company and I see that they're like, okay, hydrogen fuel cell, they're working on that. They're like, well, we're trying to make it safe so the actual, you know, customers can have it. They get into an accident, no big deal. Then they realized that wasn't the way. So then they kept working on the internal combustion engine. They have the water model. It's not ready for us on everyday use yet. But the idea is very intriguing. And the idea that they're not, what car are they using that's all electric? I can't think of one off the top of my head. It's not to say they don't have one. I'm sure they have one. But they're one of the first ones that's kind of pulling the plug on this. But they're not the only one. So it was another video for Ford. And Ford's kind of split itself up into two companies. They have Ford Motor Company and they have Ford Blue.
Don't forget Porsche. Porsche is also doing the same thing.
And Porsche is really pushing it too. And everybody's in the automotive field is
seeing the heating caution. I think like part of it though, like, is I was reading this thing, like, and they were talking about like for your what type of Tesla you have, it was somewhere in the area of like battery cost would be like in the area of like 20 to 30 grand to replace like
50.
Was it that much really?
50 grand.
Because I was reading a thing and like they were saying like because like there's like you have like a 3 or 4 module pack, whatever it is, and then they were saying like upwards of like in that, but maybe that was a US figure. But I remember thinking like that seemed absolutely absurd.
So it was Canadian figures. There was a guy, I think Global News did the story. So he bought a used Ioniq Hyundai, and it was like just past the warranty. All of a sudden, one of these lights came up on the dash. I don't remember what the name of the light was. He basically took it to the dealer, and they're like, yeah, you got to get a new battery. It's going to be $50K. And it just passed the 2-year warranty, and this guy was fuming. So imagine, it's like, well, either you just give this car back and you get what you can, which he did. He got like $2,500. And then the company reaches out after the story goes live and says, well, I wish they would have escalated it. We would have done something. This is head office. I shouldn't have to escalate it. It shouldn't be like, bro, this just passed a 2-year warranty and it's already dead in the water. So this is another reason that electric cars don't work. And like, let's be honest, electric cars have been working in Europe for how many years? Like they didn't stop. They weren't like North America where they're like, fuck this, we're going to ICE. You know what I mean? They've been doing this for years. So if they haven't been able to revolutionize it, why is it all of a sudden a big thing? Other than maybe a form of control, because there's a kill switch mandatory, I know, in the United States. Can't say so much about Canada here. And like, if you look at the cost, the overall cost to begin with, just to get in there, even with the government subsidies in Canada, it's way too pricey.
I think it's one of those things like, you know, only like a certain social class can actually afford to get into them. Even if you wanted to get into one, if you're at the lower income scale type thing, it's just not feasible, right? And I know some people were, someone was talking to who had mentioned that Elon Musk had noted that their batteries should go for 300,000 to 500,000 miles, which seemed to be really crazy. I don't know that I fully believe that. I'm not saying that he's wrong. I'm just saying I just don't know that I see that. And they noted that, you know, it would be essentially based on like charge cycles and so on and so forth. And so the one thing I often thought is like anyone that's ever used like either lithium ion batteries or even like the batteries that were previous to lithium ion, where they were using them on like a cordless power tool, things like that. You find after, you know, after a couple of years, just like your car battery, eventually that battery's not holding the charge nearly as long. You think, oh, you're just going to just do a quick project. This should easily, next thing, boom, fuck, I'm having to recharge. So I don't know. I don't think we've really seen the tip of the iceberg here with this whole thing in terms of the electric car.
So it's funny.
And the charging thing, I just think because ultimately, I think, you know, electric cars are still relatively new in terms of, you know, in terms of coming to, like, say, the used car market compared to internal combustion engine stuff. And I really think that, you know, people are going to really start to learn the hard way on how long these batteries actually last versus how long they should last.
Well, you also got to look at the ethics behind the ingredients for it, if you will. So most batteries since 2007 with the whole Samsung phone meltdown. Remember that back in the day, you couldn't take them on the airplanes.
I remember they were spontaneously combusting type thing, like on people's nightstands. They were on the airplane, like they banned it. I remember that was a big thing. Like,
of course,
huge hit to the stock price, everything. Mm-hmm.
So what they had to do was they started having to add cobalt. Cobalt right now is only being mined in 2 countries. I believe the first one's Venezuela. Don't call me out on that one, but I know for certain the second one is Congo. Mm-hmm. But they don't even pay their people a living wage. There was a journalist that talked about it recently. I think last January he was on a podcast talking about, he made a book. I can't recite the book. I'll see if I can find that when time comes. But I know he's on the Joe Rogan show talking about it. So imagine this. There's a baby on your back. You just had him, her, whatever. And you're got a pickaxe in your hand and you're clinking away. Meanwhile, in North America, they're telling you, oh, everything's being done properly. these people are protected. They got proper PPE. Not at all. We're talking these people are barely wearing shoes, okay? They're telling you that they're using construction vehicles. The only construction vehicle they're using is probably a Ford Ranger that's like 20 years old that came from the village to the mine. So these cobalt veins that they're breaking up, every time they hit them, they expel a gas from them as well. So they're inhaling it. It's poisonous to us. So these are the details I remember hearing about this. And then the only places that are refining them are in countries that can test North American ways. So they could easily up the price any day they want, anytime they want. They decide that they don't like a Canadian policy. They don't like an American policy. They don't like a European policy. Fuck you. We're going to turn up the price on this. And everybody needs cobalt in order to have a battery that's not going to like overheat, explode, you know, swell in size. So they kind of got everybody by the balls, if you will.
100%.
So that's one major problem. The other major problem is, what are you doing with those batteries? So I've seen videos where these, probably much like those big ships that they can't use no more, they ship them off to an African country to get broken down or like a ship graveyard. But the same thing happens with these batteries. So they take these batteries, and I've watched videos where they're chopping them up and they're just pouring the battery acid out of them. They have very little PPE. And this may be just an isolated, maybe one particular auto wrecker or something of that sort. Maybe that's the case. But there was a report somewhere on the internet talking about they now have battery lakes. And when animals touch them, they last 6 minutes and they go into like neurological toxic shock and die. So I'm not an environmentalist, and I'm not sitting here giving you the whole environmentalist feel. I'm just saying, when you look at the building process, which they use big diesel vehicles, as we've explained in other podcasts, those gas, like not gas, but diesel, massive dump trucks to move the ground that they're digging up in order to get the materials needed in order to
move
it up.
Stripping away a lot of the Earth's core. I mean, they're talking ultimately about coming out carbon neutral or ahead. And
how though?
I don't understand this. I really don't.
You're just, all you're doing is you're moving from the beginning and the end. So in the middle, yeah, you're not using any gas. Great for good for you. But you're fucking everything up before and after. Mm-hmm. So what's the difference?
Well, I'd love to see like on a long enough timeline, like how it all is gonna work out, right? I know like with say like Dominican Republic really doing like a lot of producing of cobalt and that, like how is that going to fare for them over say the next 30 to 50 years if we continue to go at this level, right? When you get into like the code of ethics, if you will, and pertaining to like the mining and stuff like that, you get into some real murky waters. I don't even know that like we personally would touch anywhere close to that with the internal combustion stuff in terms of like refining and that, because like we can, I mean,
it is a slippery slope. I get that.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, we could start to slide on that, but I just think like, I really feel like when it comes to mining the cobalt and stuff, and then you look at where it's being refined and everything like that, I don't know. You get into some real ethical issues there. You really do. And it's like,
and we're not here shitting on any country.
Nope.
Everybody's got their own way of doing business. I'm not here to tell you how to do it in your country. Just like I hope you're not trying to tell me what to do in my country, but even something as simple as the power grid. Mm-hmm. Our power grid is not set up for it. I've been listening and watching different stories talking about like, you know, people like companies are like, okay, you know what? We want to do the right thing. We want to get electric vehicles. We want to get electric trucks. No problem. So then they call the hydro company to say, okay, well, we need to upgrade our power receptacles so we can do this much power. And they kind of laugh at them over the phone. The municipal company, or I guess in that case, the state company, laughs. So like, do you realize that the power that you want us to send you is more than our city projects in a whole year? Mm-hmm. And you want us to send that so that you're able to charge your trucks? Like, get the fuck out of here. Or as the one guy on Instagram, I can't remember his name, get the fuck out of here, because there's a fucking wrong with you. Like, I find that guy hilarious. I'll get his name. He's a cool guy. And yeah, kind of that idea. So when you think about this, and like cities are even going further, we're getting electric buses. I think Vancouver, BC, got an electric fire truck. It's more useless than tits in a bowl and still has a diesel engine in the back as a backup. Or, sorry, not as a backup, to run the hydro part. So they have to turn on the diesel generator to pump the water from the fire hydrant and shoot it out the hose.
So essentially, really, what are we saving type thing is what it comes back to.
You're still using it. And I know buses, the electric buses, a lot of them still have diesel in the back, no matter how green they say they are, in order to run the HVAC in the bus. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what are we doing? And that the same bus that's rated for 8 hours and has probably more eyes on it than a personal car, granted, in northern provinces, states, countries, whatever you want to call it, they are not going to last the 8 hours. They're going to be out for 4 hours or less and back in the garage. Mm-hmm. So what are we talking? Like, what are we actually doing? The cost of these vehicles are exponentially more. You're not getting as much lifespan out of them, tractor, trailer, trucks, whatever it may be. And then, like, what are we doing? And then we're causing more of an environmental hazard after. I think the only way it works in the used market, like you're talking about, is if their idea of a refresh is they clean your inside of your car and change your battery for you. And I remember Tesla had a great idea for battery change off. So, like, you'd pull up to a station, you would stop at a certain point, zip, 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 zip. This machine would take out your one battery, give you a new battery that's fully charged, zip, 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 and go down the road. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Sounds great in theory.
I was going to say, it's very Back to the Future too, sort of, you know, seems like it should
hardly
be so
that
simple. And
I hardly believe it would be a 10, like a 2 minute thing, like it would be going to the gas station.
No, but I'm just saying, it's like on paper, it sounds wonderful. It sounds like a unicorn. Like, it's
yeah.
Like, that sounds fantastic. I want that,
yep.
You know, in theory. But then you get into logistics,
exactly what you tell me.
You get into recycling programs. You get into all sorts of logisticals of where are these stations magically going to be? What will the recycling program be to deal with these batteries? If you get 100 batteries in a day, where are they all going? Who's refining them after? Like, who's recycling? What's going on with this stuff? Again, like, it's if you leave that battery sitting there on the sidewalk for the next 5 years, is it going to start to leak and break down?
Here's the other problem. So a lot of those batteries are held by what product? Plastic. What's plastic a byproduct of? Petroleum. All these things are all connected. Clothes, plastics are all connected to petroleum. So now we're killing a bunch of other markets. And like, I'm not saying petroleum is the only way. Mm-hmm. But we haven't figured out another way. Even like what? Those single-use straws that are all
things.
Paper.
Yep. Hate them.
Like, think about that. They had to spray a special chemical in them, and now they're causing more harm to humans than if they were using single plastics. And let's not kid ourselves. Single plastics are not good for us either. Those particles go in us, and as it's been explained by other doctors on different shows, on different podcasts, that the more plastics we ingest or have in contact with our body, it shrinks our scrotum. And I know you have a small one anyway, so it's not going to hurt you.
Yeah, if we're measuring by arm length.
Yeah. But like for guys like me and my kids, like I worry, right? Because when they say the smaller the scrotum, the less, you know, sperm you're shooting out, the whole nine yards. I'm not a medical doctor. I'm just kind of like reciting what I heard. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I'm just, when you look at the whole pyramid of things, I'm not saying the old way is right. Because I know a lot of people are going to hear that. You're like, oh, you're just pro-petroleum. No, I'm not. But in order to move to a different direction, we have to have something that actually works. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you remember going to the grocery store and getting a paper bag? And you have a bunch of cans and the whole thing falls apart halfway down, the fucking leaving the cashier?
Makes for a fun time, right?
No, it makes it miserable as fuck. You can't hold as much.
No, I know.
So the plastic bags were a little bit more convenient. Even yeah. The reusable bags made out of recycled bags.
I think like grocery bags personally, I mean, a little off topic, but I think personally like the grocery bags were handy as hell and they were very reusable. How many times now you get those mesh fabric bag, whatever, and you forget them in the damn car, you buy, I mean, from a store aspect, they're selling them hand over fist. I mean, they're loving it probably, you know, $2 for a bag that they used to give you one for 5 cents or nothing.
Yeah.
Right. Now they're giving you, you know, here's a dollar for a bag. And hey, do you want to donate a dollar? And, you know, they fleece you every which way they can.
Definitely.
And
frisk
then,
you.
And then, you know, you get home and you've got like a whole closet full of these bags. And I personally don't see like an abundance of people out walking around carrying, you know, stuff in these, you know, whether it be a Walmart or a Sobeys or a whatever arbitrary reusable bag. So it's like, I question the validity of like of some of that stuff, right? And I think versus like,
is it better for the environment when you think about it?
It's hard to say. I don't know what the decomposition of some of those bags are, but I do question like what's the dyes, the manufacturing process, all the things that go into those bags.
I bet you it's no better is what I'm trying to say. I'm not saying it's good that we have it. Once mm-hmm. again, I'm saying that I bet you in the long of it all, mm-hmm. it's not doing us any better for mm-hmm. the environment. Because it doesn't matter if you have it out in the grass for years. It's not breaking down any quicker than the plastic one is.
I don't know. Maybe it might. I don't know. Part of me says like I could see it because like they seem so damn thin. Like maybe it would. It's hard to say though. But like I question more so like
I bet you something the dyes like 2 years.
And the colorings that go into the bags yeah. and everything to make them. How does that you know affect the soil?
I bet you something stupid is like a year or two difference. So if it's 100 years, it's like, oh, 98 years, this one decomposes.
We'd almost have to try it. We'd have to almost damn near try it.
But the one thing I can say about those plastic bags, and everybody on here can probably relate to this, whenever you're wearing winter boots, put your feet in a fucking plastic bag, still your feet are still nice and warm. Mm-hmm.
100%. Did that as a kid all the time. Like, your boots would be sopping wet. You put them into a plastic milk bag or something.
Yeah.
I know we're crazy here.
Canadians, you damn Canadians, you know, with your fucking milk bags.
And I don't even think it's all Canadians because, like, I have some friends out in the prairie provinces.
That's still Canadian.
I know, but I'm saying they have milk jugs like they do in the States.
Oh.
They don't have the bags. I remember I have a
they
friend.
Suck.
I have a friend in Alberta and
we're talking to Ontario. About it, suffer like the rest of us.
And I said, look, oh my God, you guys have milk jugs just like the States. And they looked at me like I was crazy.
Yeah.
And I had to explain, no, the milk bags.
We have that milk we have, jugs in our store. It's just we choose the milk bags. But did you notice how smaller they made them?
You don't see the jugs very often. You don't. And I saw a clip about the bags being smaller, but I thought I read a thing that was just like a one-off blip or something with like the
I don't know. I haven't tried it. We'll have to try it. Because you imagine all those jugs and you can't even pour your own milk?
Like first world problem for sure.
But yeah.
I could just, oh, the
humanity. The irony.
Yes.
So going back to the cars.
Yes. Hate them. Sorry. Love cars. Hate EVs.
Okay. Hybrids are okay, though. I kind of dig them
you know,
still, but you're still going to run into the
I
problem.
Shouldn't even say, you know, I shouldn't say, like, that was a strong statement. I shouldn't say hate EVs. Like, I think I don't mind if they have a place. I don't have a, like, some of the stuff that they're working on, you know, with them is pretty cool. But I am by no means rushing out to buy a new EV. Just not happening. I would go out and buy 3 gasoline or some sort of internal combustion engine powered vehicle before I buy an EV. Just saying. That's just me.
That's fair. So in Canada, though, by 2026, they want no vehicles other than electric being sold. So knowing that a lot of manufacturers recently have all stated that they're halting electric production, how is that going to work for us as Canadians?
I would, there's a lot of things that they want to see by a certain date and they can't even get the Eglinton Crosstown figured out. So I have zero faith and core concern pertaining to if they're going to halt production of anything gasoline or internal combustion powered by 2026. We're talking 2.5 years or 2.25 years, whatever you want to reference it as.
I thought we were supposed to be in flying cars by now.
That was by 2015.
I'm seeing rappers saying do not eat the wrapper on burgers.
Yeah, so
it's weird, right?
Like it's you know also like don't drink the antifreeze. Like it used to be, you know, this is how you adjust your valves.
Yeah.
Now don't drink the antifreeze. Good to know, right?
In the manual.
So
it's a big deal.
Weird times that we're in, right?
Yeah, when you have to be told not to eat the box.
I don't think like that we are going to see, you know, like, that being said, like there is a lot of electric car companies that are out there and there are a lot of companies that are making electric cars that I'm sure will, you know, have some sort of foothold or whatever, but for just to expect everybody to go over to an electric car in the next 2 years, let's say, let's be realistic, 2 years is really a mouse fart in comparison to like how long internal combustion engines have been around. You're not just going to all of a sudden get the infrastructure magically put together in the next 2 years. Not going to happen.
That was the other thing I wanted to bring up.
I just want to say, like, without getting political, with the next election that comes up, you could all of a sudden have a complete barn burner and a major shift in power or person in power. And all of a sudden, boom, all this bullshit's out the window because someone else has a new, better plan or in their version, like an agenda that they want to push forward.
But this is another thing I want to bring up is when you get stuck on the highway and you didn't check your voltage correctly, your mileage, if you will, and you end up being out of power on the highway. When CAA shows up, do you think they're coming with an electric power station or are they coming with a generator, diesel, to power your Tesla or your electric car?
I'd say right now they're bringing a diesel. And for the next couple of years at least, I see bringing a diesel. I think because like their service fleet is sort of essentially designed from my vantage point or perspective is that their service fleet is designed to be resourceful to many, many different types of vehicles in many conditions. And what I mean by that is that like their trucks need to be able to service everything from someone in a Tesla to someone in a, you know, a 64 Ford Galaxy and everything in between.
Or Ranger.
Oh, absolutely. Right. So I think like they need vehicles or trucks from a service side that can haul heavy loads. So then you're going to be into a diesel. And, you know, I don't think EVs are there yet. Not to say that with enough time and resources thrown at that they can't get there to a better place. I mean, you look at the, like where we've gone with in terms of battery technology, say over the last 10 years, and has it advanced along? Yes, it has, but you still come back to, again, some of the instabilities pertaining to lithium batteries. You still come back to recycling issues as to what the long-term effects and such will be. It's interesting. It truly is. And like I say, like I would rather, as an example, take a 1960 Chevrolet over a 2010, you know, Tesla, just because I feel like it's going to be cheaper dollar for dollar to get that, you know, that car out of the 1960s up and running again after it's been sitting for, say, 10 years than it would to get that Tesla up and running after it's been sitting for 10 years.
Well, even some of those charging stations are not electric. They're powered by natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
So even like, let's say there's off generator ones that are natural gas or diesel or whatever. So when you think about it, it's like the idea that someone said on Twitter about in America, it's like, you're saving the world with your Tesla, but you don't realize you're using coal to power it up. It's
I think like
kind of backwards. It's,
dare I say, a feel good exercise.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and again, it's not saying that fossil fuels are necessarily the best thing for the environment either. You know, no one's saying that.
But
right?
If we could refine what we have,
oh, 100%. I'm just saying though,
would that be better than trying to change things?
And I agree. I'm just saying though, essentially, is that there's always going to be a downside. Like, and that's for numerous things in life where there's always going to be like something that you think that this should be the best thing. And it's like, well, it's better. It's not the best, but the best would be if we went back just to a horse and buggy and, maybe not travel so much in terms of like, you know, airplanes and all this and that, but that's not realistic. Let's be honest. So I think the next best thing is finding like a happy medium where, you know, there's definitely like a room or there is a niche market for electric vehicles and where they work. But then likewise, there's other areas where they're just not practical or they don't make sense.
I think they're for races. If you had to be like, if you think about it, it's a cool engine. It's quiet.
Oh, no, see,
they'd be so cool in races.
It's neat. If you want to like say as an example, as we talked about in that previous episode about electric cars, like there is the Formula E series, which is pretty cool. But I mean, literally halfway through the race, they're coming in and they're quite literally switching cars.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about coming in for a pit stop to change the tires and refuel or give the driver a drink while they change. They're literally come in, they pull that one car in nose first, the driver jumps out, jumps into a second car, let that sink in, that's facing outwards of the pits or out of the garage, and then drives out. So you want to talk about green energy or a green sport.
Well, now, I wasn't saying necessarily be green. It just the engine but
I'm just saying as a overall to tie things together. So now essentially though you are transporting two of these things to actually participate in the race versus as an example in some sanctioning bodies where they have like a primary and a backup or a primary and a secondary car. The second one there is only if the primary one breaks down and only as an issue. Otherwise, it's just, you know, it's just there. It's not actually being utilized. So now, though, you're having to utilize two different cars, running the battery down on both of them, and they've still got to ultimately be charged up. So, again, like, it doesn't get off scot-free. It looks good. It's a feel-good exercise, if you will, but I don't know that it specifically gets off, you know, with a full blessing.
I'll leave you with this one. This is the last one we'll do, and we'll cut this bad boy up. They want to make electric tanks and electric jet fighters. Now imagine, you're in a full-fledged war, and you're paying more attention to your how much energy you have left opposed to what's the enemy doing. So you're in the middle of a dogfight with another jet, and you're like, what are you going to say? All right, I'm almost out of power, bro. So I'm going to go back to my ship and get another plane. I'll be back in a second.
I think, though, to a certain degree, though, is like stuff like that.
It defeats the purpose.
No, but I mean, in fairness, though, like you could also probably argue that point, though, like if it was a fossil fuel fed, you know, tank or airplane, you could probably argue that same thing is that regardless on the battlefield, they're only going to have so much fuel or so much resources to get them through, so many missiles or ammunition, whatever, to get them through. I think, though, again, it comes back to, is the infrastructure there to charge these things out there on the battlefield?
Well, just think of, we're not from the U.S., but Air Force One or any plane of that magnitude can get refueled in the air, right? You're not going to have that option if it's electric.
Yeah, not that we know of yet. I haven't been able to find anything or from anyone in the aviation industry that I have talked to has heard anything about, you know, any sort of recharging system that's been worked on. But I mean, again, like it's one of those things like where even if it was approved, you'd still have to win the consumer over if they're comfortable enough to try that.
Just thinking, I don't think you care about the environment when you're shooting off missiles and tanks and stuff of that nature. Like, I don't think that's your main concern at that point. You're clearly, you got clearly other things on the top of your mind, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not saying that we shouldn't think with the environment and all that stuff. Once again, I'm not an eco warrior, but I'm not against the environment either. But I'm just kind of like a realist when it comes down to this. And, you know, I'm not pro war or against war either. Like, everything's got its purpose, I believe, to a certain extent. But at the end of the day, like, you know, the idea of being more concerned if your tank is, you know.
The only thing I could see, like, pertaining to the electric tanks is if you ever listen to an electric car drive by, like, I think they've put that sort of, like, humming sort of noise on them to warn people that they're coming. But otherwise, like, they are incredibly quiet.
Yeah, but tank treads are never quiet.
No, I know. But I'm just saying, though, that it could be a segue to at least then you're cutting down on the decibel reading that the diesel would be putting out. And if you can, if you can do that, it's only a matter of time until they continue to look at the resources and engineering side of how do we make the treads there on the tank quieter. How do we go to different types of bearings or...
See, that sounds great, but at the end of the day, when you're facing the other army and they're using fossil fuel-powered army equipment, they've got more distance. They got more maneuverability.
But you could argue also, though, that these could be faster. Like, and I'm not saying that I'm
They could be faster.
I'm just saying that I could...
But charging it.
No, and that's... I come back to that, but I can also... I'm not obtuse to the fact that there isn't benefits to the electric tank. It's just I don't think we're there yet. And then, but I still, and again, if you're at war, you're probably not worried about what the recycling program is.
Yeah.
And how we're going to, you're worried about just getting through that day or that moment. But I still maintain, like, I'd like to see what happens if you leave an electric tank or an electric car sitting in a field for 20 years. Like, how is that
going to end up leaving things?
Mm-hmm. How is it going to go over? Is it going to start?
Because you're watching the energy, and I would imagine you're like, okay, well, it's either we take these next 20 shots or we could run back to base. What do you want to do? You know what I mean? Like, if you have the enemy at a strategic advantage, but you know that if you take another shot, now you're definitely not going to be able to take that tank all the way back.
And again, and I agree with that point, but then you still ultimately get to a point where it's like, well, we're going to have to bail and ditch this airplane or whatever with this tank because it's not going to have enough fossil fuels to get us back. Now, that being said, if there's, say, a quarter tank in there, I'm sure that the gun will continue to fire on that tank until the quarter tank of fuel or whatever diesel has burned itself up. That being said, in terms of an electric battery, it's hard to say, will the distance or the range of that cannon sort of come down as well because it's trying to conserve power, or will you manually be able to override it? But again, you're only going to get so many shots before the battery just doesn't give enough kick type thing to send the rocket or missile. I mean, there's definitely questions there. But again, like, I just don't think we are fully there. And when you start looking into the price of some of the batteries for these vehicles to replace, and that's just for the battery, never mind, like, you can argue, well, it doesn't have all the moving components that a gasoline engine, you know, production vehicle has, and that's fine, that's a fair argument, but it still has the front end components in terms of steering, it still has tires, it has electrical, you know, things, glitches, whatever, to go wrong. So you really start to wonder, like, how far ahead are you ultimately getting?
But here's my favorite part.
Mm-hmm.
How likely are you to be able to make an electric tank if the opponent you're facing is the one that holds the key to all the components to that tank?
I think the bigger question is once the opponent that you're potentially facing has sold the rest of the world on, or once the rest of the world has been sold on by their own,
bingo,
to go all electric and scrap, you know, their internal combustion programs, and then the only person that is primarily refining the cobalt and such as a, you know, as a global superpower decides that, hey, we're shutting off the spigot now, that's when you have a problem.
And you know that's coming down the pipe.
I don't know whether it's something that, like, we would see in the next, like, 5, 7 years, 8 years, whatever. But, you know, the way things are going globally speaking, it wouldn't be surprised to see it's that something that happens in the next 20 years.
I'd say 5 years. If we were to follow this plan that we have just in this country alone,
mm-hmm.
2026, can't sell anything that's not electric.
I still don't see that actually coming to fruition.
Nor do I.
I don't.
Like, but let's just say they say, I don't give a shit if the manufacturer says they can do it or not. This is what it is.
And just to be clear, like, for everyone that knows me personally, if by 2026 comes, mark this down, if 2026 comes and all automobile manufacturers cease to sell anything that is internal combustion engine, mark my words, I will personally have a t-shirt made that says, I love electric cars. Because I'm so confident in myself that it's not going to happen. I'm not even worried about it. Like, I just don't, like, 2 years out, we don't have the infrastructure. We can't, like,
it's, I'll wear a Borat thong if it happens. That's how confident I am.
Yeah. So it's not
on a long, hot day.
I honestly hope it doesn't happen because, like,
I eat a whole bunch of Taco Bell burritos.
Just sort of vomited in my mouth a little bit there. No, but honestly, I just don't see it coming, John. Like, and again,
it's not happening.
I think, to be clear, I don't have a problem with electric cars in the sense of if you yourself want to go out and purchase one or use one. I think in some cases they are handy. They do have a place. But I also think, you know, hydrogen and, you know, there's all sorts of, like, different alternative fuels and or
with zero emissions or damn near close.
Yeah, or just different ones that they do produce an emission, but, you know, it also works and it's reasonable or it's rational for the amount of work that that vehicle or product is putting out in terms of a pollutant versus like a risk versus reward thing, right?
Like baby steps makes more sense to me than just all out abandonment.
You know what? Before, I'm sure like if you were to ask the cavemen before they, you know, took the water and dumped out their fire, I'm sure they had their torches lit.
Yep.
Phrase it that way, right? And
yep.
Had some sort of idea as to where they'd be marching to with those torches. And I think when you see companies, especially like Porsche, companies that are very engineered and very well and want to be leaders and front runners in this change, start to heed caution and pull back, I think that there says something, because it's obviously engineers and directors that are far smarter and far more connected than you know, John and myself are. I think they would, you know, it's because they see something on the horizon. They definitely see some warning signs, or they've been heeded and warned as to how to maybe should be directing their movements going forward.
Like the technology is coming along, but it's not where it needs to be. Nowhere even near where it needs to be in order for it to be able to replace the ice.
Well, the technology and, or again, the infrastructure. Like, it's not just going to get replaced in 2 years. Like, I mean, they can barely finish up, say, Queen Street,
you know,
just getting the road smooth. So you think all of a sudden now they're going to start bringing, you know, and you talk about smooth roads, and like, I just want to highlight, you know, potholes and accidents and things like that.
And
like,
that's all going to affect your energy.
You look at like when one of these vehicles is in an accident or
potential combustion,
or like, you know, if it catches fire. I saw a thing there online. They were showing about at a Tesla dealership, and there was like 10 of them all just burned out, like literally just in a row, all, you know, burn. And now that being said, I could obviously understand how arson things work. So you could easily see it happen at a dealership where it's, you know, 10 or 12 internal combustion engine. But you often watch, like when they show one of these EV cars on fire, it's more so just like a management thing at that point of keeping it somewhat contained versus actually being able to extinguish the
flames. They just let it burn out.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, lots of stuff there to unpack on like these EVs, and I think the more time that goes by, the more we're learning about them, and I think I personally feel are getting a little bit gun shy to them because they're hearing the stories and they're seeing, like, you know, what's going on in terms of a service side of it. And it's one of those things, I think, if you're just keeping the car a year or two, maybe on a lease, and you're only doing, you know, some in-town driving, or if you're doing out-of-town driving, but you're not doing, you know, 25, 30,000 clicks or so plus a year, then, you know, maybe that's all right. But, you know, it's not something I'll be flipping over to anytime soon after like everything that I've seen.
Fuck no, me either there, mofo. I thank you for your time and your expertise as usual, Motorsports Mofo.
I wouldn't even call it expertise on this, John, because again, like it's definitely a learning curve with this EV stuff. But you know, I want to reiterate, anyone that knows me or follows me on Instagram at Motorsports Mofo knows that I'm a huge car guy, and I have a, you know, a love for a vast variety of automobiles
and rubber,
of course, absolutely. So not against EVs in the sense of I would take like one if it worked for me, but I would not be rushing out to buy one at a dealer and or pay these extraordinary absorbent prices over,
and that's with a government subsubsidy.
Again, a whole other topic, but I would not be paying these crazy prices just to say that I'm feeling green or saving the environment, because when you really start to dissect that, it gets into a whole other conversation.
A wise person once told me nobody likes to tip, so that's why we go deep.
Go deep.
Go deep.
Go deep.
This is Go Deep Productions.
Thank you for listening to Go Deep the Podcast, a member of Go Deep Productions, where we give our opinions like we have a clue. You can find us on all forms of social media. If you would like to reach out to the show, email us at godeepthepodcast@gmail.com. And remember, always go deep.